Today on Vox Talks Economics, some home truths about monetary policy's housing channel. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week, we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe. You'll never miss an episode if you do. It's that time of year again. I'm talking about IMF World Economic Outlook time, of course. This year's report has an intriguing piece of research that shows how rising policy rates bit harder in some countries and not others because of the differences in their housing and mortgage markets. Here to explain is Rui Mano of the IMF's research department, who is one of the many authors of this research. Rui, welcome to Vox Talks Economics. Bon dia.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having us.
We're talking about this because economists have this theory of the housing channels of monetary policy transmission. So how is monetary policy, in theory, transmitted through, well, let's start with our mortgages?
Maybe first we should define for your listeners what we mean here by monetary policy transmission, because it can mean many things.
Oh, yes.
So really what we have in mind here are the macro effects of monetary policy on, say, economic activity like production, consumption, investment, prices, not so much the monetary policy effects on, say, the stock market or interest rates in general, which of course then themselves have macro effects. Mm-hmm. So just to put a pin on that. You asked about the macro effects of monetary policy that go through mortgages to start with.
Yes.
So maybe we can split these into two parts. First, the effects that go through new mortgages, and second, the effects that go through existing mortgages. First, changes in monetary policy, of course, affect the rates that banks quote on new mortgages, which in turn, of course, will affect the willingness to borrow of home buyers. So that means that, for example, the same property may become unaffordable just because rates are now much higher than they were before.
Okay.
And I think listeners will have a good sense of this, either personally or somebody they know has had to deal with that problem.
I've had to deal with that problem several times.
There you
I
go.
Completely understand.
This effect goes through reduced demand for credit. So people now are demanding less credit, therefore they'll demand less housing, which depresses house prices, which then has knock-on effects on GDP and consumption.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first, through new mortgages. The second effect is through existing homeowners having a mortgage. So in many countries, monthly mortgage payments are indexed to market rates.
Mm-hmm.
For example, treasury bond rates or the LIBOR here in the US. Because higher policy rates tend to also raise treasury rates, homeowners will see their monthly mortgage payments rise in these countries where rates adjust. If, say, my monthly mortgage payment is rising, I may have to cut back on other spending that I was making just because, you know, my income is limited or I don't want to or I'm not able to borrow to make up for those payments. In this case, monetary policy will have a very direct effect on household consumption by me reducing my spending, even if it doesn't have that much of an effect on house prices.
And are there other effects in theory on the housing market?
The first type of effect that we talked about on new mortgages mostly goes through the effect on credit and then house prices. So you can think about monetary policy affecting house prices, and that then has an effect on consumption. And so there's other types of channels like this that not necessarily go through credit. For example, there's what people or economists call an expectations channel. So imagine that rising rates make people expect that house prices may be depressed for a while. That will further depress house prices today, just like expectations about future stock prices depress the stock market today. So monetary policy affects house prices through either credit demand or expectations. And then there's a feedback loop. Lower house prices can themselves depress expectations, reduce access to credit, which themselves then lower house prices and so forth. Maybe there's a quick word here to be said about wealth effects and how they relate to housing. Housing is an important part of most people's wealth. Unlike some other assets, financial assets, that may not be as held by households in most countries. If house prices are depressed, that will reduce my net worth. If my net worth goes down, I may cut back on my consumption. And this is another way that monetary policy will affect the macro economy through housing markets.
As you say, housing is very important for people's wealth all over the world. Do we know how important these housing channels are compared to the other methods in which monetary policy is transmitted?
Right. So here I have to say that our chapter did not compare across channels. We just really focused on these housing channels. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you what I know from the literature. In general, say in larger economies that tend to rely more on domestic consumption for their growth rather than exports, this is thought to be a major, major channel. Mm-hmm. Mortgages are the largest liability of households everywhere. For most people, housing is their only significant form of wealth, and therefore real estate tends to account for a large share of consumption, of investment, of employment, of even consumer prices in most economies.
We know that all over the world, there has been monetary policy tightening in the last year, 18 months, to squeeze out that post-pandemic inflation. What sort of changes in policy rates have we seen post-COVID in the different countries that you look at?
We looked at a very wide sample of countries, including advanced economies and emerging markets. So just to give you a couple of numbers, the median advanced economy tightened nominal policy rates by about 400 basis points. Mm-hmm. And the median emerging market tightened by about 450 basis points. So these are quite sizable. But really what makes this post-COVID tightening remarkable is not only its size, but the speed and really the breadth, mm-hmm. that it was so widespread. So most countries really tighten, and they tighten quickly and sizably.
When you talk about 400 basis points, for people who don't live in your world, that's 4%.
That's 4 percentage points. So maybe I could give you a quick example on this effect of new mortgages and existing mortgages with actual numbers. Let me use the example of the US where I sit. The US before March 2022 had a policy rate of 0 to 0.25%. And now that same rate is 5 to 5.25%. Mm-hmm. That's a 500 basis points increase. So larger than the median advanced economy that I just described. Now, what happened to mortgage rates? Mortgage rates in the US for new mortgages, they went up about 400 basis points, 4%. So if you were in 2021, you could borrow 30 years at fixed rate below 3%. Oh, oh. Now it's something like 7%.
Wow.
So that's a big change. It affects the demand for credit. It affects the demand for housing. So that was the first channel that we initially discussed, right, on new mortgages. What happened to mortgages that reset? So if you had the bad chance of having a mortgage in the US that was adjustable, they're not so common in the US, and maybe we'll talk about this later. But if you have that bad chance and you had a reset of your rate, in the US, there's a period in which rates will not change even if you have an adjustable rate mortgage. But then after that period expires, rates reset according to either LIBOR or the one-year treasury rate. If you have that misfortune, you may see your payments increase by 500 basis points. It's an even bigger increase than the change in new mortgages. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that the rate on new mortgages is a very long rate, right? Mortgages in the US are given typically at 30 years, very long dated asset. Therefore, the rates that are relevant for that kind of lending are going to be very long term rates. And these rates have gone up less than short-term rates have.
But bearing in mind what you've said about how fast rates have moved and how far they have moved, this should be a test of what we know about the transmission of monetary policy through these channels, shouldn't it?
Yeah. So this is indeed a good laboratory to think about this. You have on one hand, a fairly common monetary policy tightening, like we were discussing. And on the other hand, very, very different housing and mortgage markets. This probably will help us tease out what's the importance of these different characteristics across countries. And that's the great advantage of having such a big sample or wide sample of countries, is that you really have very different housing and mortgage markets in our sample.
Well, we'll find out a little bit more about that in a second.
A recent CEBR book investigated how different central banks tightened monetary policy in response to inflation. And we interviewed Bill English, one of the editors, about the lessons we can learn from the events of the last 2 years. Find out what those lessons were in our episode, Monetary Policy Responses to Inflation, broadcast on the 28th of March.
So, Rui, a big result, first of all, from this monetary policy tightening, are all of these economies that you've looked at feeling the pinch of that equally?
This is a very interesting question, because we were just talking about how policy rates have increased largely everywhere, but there's really a wide diversity of experiences across countries. So in some countries, households are clearly feeling the pinch of higher rates. For example, Germany and Sweden have seen house prices and private consumption fall since the beginning of their hiking cycles. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, other countries like the US have been quite resilient.
Are some mortgage holders just not feeling the effect because the rates for them haven't changed?
Right, Tim. So you saw where this was coming.
Yeah.
Indeed, fixed versus adjustable rate mortgages is a quite important characteristic that we focused on. Mm-hmm. If households borrowed at fixed rates, then of course they'll be relatively insulated from these increases in policy rates and market rates. We've discussed this one quite a bit, but maybe let me tell you about a couple others still on mortgage characteristics. Another important determinant is the extent to which households are indebted or leveraged. Mm-hmm. We find that countries with indebted households adjust consumption faster or see a sharper reduction in housing demand for the same change in policy rates. You could count three characteristics that we found matter: the degree to which mortgage rates are fixed, the level of indebtedness, and limits to leverage.
And that leverage is, for example, in some countries, it's common to borrow 90% of the value of a house. In other countries, you can only borrow, say, 70 or 60%.
Perfect. Typically in housing or mortgage parlance, this will be the loan-to-value ratio.
Loan-to-value. Yes.
Right? So the value of your mortgage over the value of the house you're buying. Indeed, there's quite big differences across countries. Some countries, you can borrow up to the value of your house. Mm-hmm. So literally, you could go up to 100% of value of your house. Whereas in some other countries, there's regulatory limits that are quite strict. They can be as low as 50%. So you cannot borrow more than 50% of the value of your house. And we find that these regulatory limits to leverage, which of course are going to be upper bounds on the extent to which households are actually leveraging, these also matter quite a bit for the transmission of monetary policy.
You give me some examples of places where rates are fixed, sometimes for a very long, long time. Where are those fixed rates most common? Where are they least common?
Fixed rates are very common in, for example, the US, as I mentioned, but also Mexico, France, or Germany. All these have very high shares of fixed rate mortgages. On the other end of the spectrum, you have countries like South Africa, Spain, even Japan, that have much lower shares of fixed rate mortgages. But really here we're talking about a continuum, and many countries will fall in between these two groups.
I guess housing markets are not the same in every country either. They have different attributes, different strengths and weaknesses. Again, what are the country differences there?
Right. Housing markets vary a lot, even within a country, as we all know. So we looked at two characteristics in particular using regional data to try to get at this within country variation. So first, we looked at the extent to which housing supply is restricted. We found that housing supply restrictions strengthen the transmission of monetary policy. So the same shift in demand and mortgage rates leads to larger changes in house prices where supply is restricted. And this in turn, of course, then will decrease private consumption and GDP. So that's one characteristic. We looked at the extent to which house prices are overvalued. which of course is in many people's minds when they think about the housing market. So sharp rises in house prices are often driven by essentially over-optimism about future house prices. And these are typically accompanied also by leverage, sometimes excessive leverage. If you think about a monetary policy tightening, that it will be more likely to create a cycle of falling house prices and potentially even foreclosures in an environment where leverage is much higher. And that, of course, again, in turn, depresses income and consumption through these wealth effects that we talked about.
As we talk about it, it really shows for the household what a huge commitment this is, how potentially risky a commitment it is. So putting all this together, in which countries do you see the housing channel is particularly strong?
Countries like Australia, Chile, Japan appear to have stronger housing channels of monetary policy transmission. And that's because they tend to have relatively low shares of fixed rate mortgages, just like we were talking about. There's more leverage. There's more household debt in some of these countries. And there's also a high proportion of population living in housing supply restricted areas. But again, there's a continuum. And in our chapter, we show how these channels vary for the cross section of countries that we looked at.
But I want to ask you about the other end of the continuum. Where do you find the channels weakest?
Countries like Colombia, Hungary, Israel, some of these are more likely to exhibit weaker transmission through these housing channels. Household debt, it's on the lower end of the spectrum. There's less supply constraints in housing markets, for example.
So bring us back to where we started, Rui. Can you detect the effect of these strong and weak channels in how successful the recent tightening has been at bringing down inflation?
This is a more complicated question, Tim, because you're asking how our analyses, which essentially we take great pains into isolating the effect of monetary policy, right? And then linking that to data, which has every single shock happening at the same time, including, unfortunately, wars and things that are going on in the world right now.
That is exactly what I'm asking you, yes.
Of course, there will never be a one-to-one mapping, but I think because of the difficulty in separating all these factors and essentially supply and demand factors that have played a role, our chapter focuses on consumption as the main variable of study. So we're not really looking so much at prices. What we see is that indeed the strength of these channels lines up broadly with actual changes in both house prices and real consumption since these countries started hiking. So there's some correspondence, but I don't want to stretch it too much, Tim.
Rui, your analysis takes in homeowners, of course, but by definition, not renters. And in some advanced economies, that's almost half the housing market. Are they affected by these channels as well?
Most definitely they are. We didn't study rents, not so much because we didn't think they were important, but rather because getting comparable rent data across all these countries that we looked at was really hard. And so I'll give you some idea of recent work by others that has shown that, for example, monetary policy can have quite different effects on renters versus homeowners. So we were saying that rising rates would potentially depress house prices, both because of these housing and mortgage market characteristics. But for renters, because you may have a delayed entry into owning a house because now mortgages are so unaffordable that you have to delay your decision of a first home purchase, then you have to rent for longer, meaning that the demand for rent space may actually go up. And therefore, rents could actually go up when monetary policy tightens. And that's an effect that has been documented. I'll say one thing, though, that of course, rents have the same thing as mortgages, that it's not because there's now higher demand for rent space that your rent will go up immediately. These are contracts. They typically have a fixation period as well. So you'll be insulated for some time. But of course, if your landlord thinks that they could raise rents and you would stay, then maybe you could see your rents go up.
One of the things that you bring out is the rise in the number, the proportion of people who are fixing the rates for their mortgages. So does this imply that policymakers should be paying more attention to the details of the country's mortgage and housing markets when they set out to do policy tightening in the future?
Well, of course, but central banks are well aware of all of this that we're talking about. I think what we're bringing to the discussion is a much wider cross-country experience that really helps in identify the strength and the direction of these channels. So if you're looking only at your own country, you, of course, are aware that these channels are operating. You have some idea and a lot of analyses on what's the strength of these channels, but you may have not, for example, looked at what happens in other countries. And so that's what we're bringing here.
And for those central banks that do their research and they find out that these channels are relatively weak, what are the implications for them?
If you start in late 2021, early 2022, and you're seeing inflationary pressures build, as we did in many economies, if you know that these channels tend to have weakened, as a central bank, you may be willing to be more forceful.
Mm-hmm.
And you may tighten more when early signs of overheating and inflation pressures are first emerging.
But if you are in a country where a lot of people fix their mortgage rates for 3 years or 5 years, which is, for example, what I'm offered when I go back to my mortgage advisor, is there a risk that over-tightening might happen? Because, as you say, you're more aggressive at first and then households come off fixed rates and get a nasty shock.
That's a good observation. In many countries where fixed rate mortgages became more prevalent, they can be fixed only for 3 to 5 years. While transmission could be weak now, temporarily, as mortgage rates start resetting, households could quickly start feeling the pinch. Central banks should be vigilant against the risk of over-tightening.
Rui Manuel, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
The chapter is called Feeling the Pinch, Tracing the Effects of Monetary Policy Through Housing Markets. It's chapter 2 of the 2024 IMF World Economic Outlook, which is available now.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. If you want to hear more about the latest and most interesting research in economics, then subscribe. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, will AI destroy jobs or create them?